From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, did Adolf Hitler escape the falling Nazi Germany during World War II? Jerome Corsi thinks so. Hunting Hitler, next hour, a remarkable story. Here's what's happening. Well, a new potentially hazardous asteroid has been discovered by one of NASA's recently reactivated spacecraft. And guess what? It's headed in Earth's direction. The new asteroid called 2013 YP-139 was spotted by NASA's Near-Earth Object Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer. That's a mouthful, and marks the spacecraft's first discovery since being resurrected last year. The asteroid is still 27 million miles away from Earth. It's got a diameter of nearly 0.4 miles, almost a half a mile wide. An impact with our planet would cause significant damage. NASA estimates any asteroid with a diameter greater than 0.5 could create worldwide consequences upon impact. Now, this asteroid doesn't quite raise concern to the level yet, but its trajectory has attracted the attention of NASA. NASA adds that the asteroid will miss Earth this time around, though it will fly by our planet at a distance of 300,000 miles. That's about as close as the moon. It's not expected to get any closer for the next century, so don't panic yet. But what this all tells you is there are still asteroids out there we haven't even discovered yet that could be coming this way. Wells Fargo and Company has called finance executives, virtual currency experts, and U.S. government representatives together to discuss rules of engagement with Bitcoin and concern about the money laundering risk of this currency. The meeting is scheduled for Tuesday in San Francisco, focusing on the security issues surrounding banking and Bitcoin as financial regulators warn consumers, you, on the risks of being unregulated online currency users. Bitcoin, which unlike conventional money, is bought and sold on a peer-to-peer network independent of any central authority, no Federal Reserve, has grown popular among users who lack faith in the established banking system. In Iran, President Hassan Rouhani has praised a landmark nuclear deal struck in Geneva as his country's victory, telling a home crowd it effectively means the surrender of Western powers to Iranian demands. The remarks, though, were part of the moderate Rouhani's efforts to bring around some hardliners who claim that the deal tramples on Iran's enrichment rights. Last week, the six-nation group, the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, and Germany and Iran agreed to start implementing the terms of the November deal later this month. Under the deal, Iran agreed to cap its uranium enrichment in return for some relief from Western economic sanctions. John Curtis, the editor of OnlineColumnist.com, with us. John, what do you think of this whole thing, this negotiation with Iran?
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, the U.S. is under Obama is not prepared to go into another war. So, I mean, while there's certain people that will tell you that this is like a Nuremberg situation, not Nuremberg, but I mean, you know, a treaty somehow of appeasement, the reality is that when Ahmadinejad, who was kind of a hothead in 2005, raised an issue in the media that said that he wanted to see Israel wiped off the map, the reference was not to dropping a nuclear bomb on Israel. It was that they didn't accept the current map of the, you know, of Israel's boundaries and borders. And from that, Netanyahu has whipped the Israeli population into a frenzy, referring to this as Iran as an existential threat. A, we don't even know that they have a nuclear program anywhere that we knew that Saddam Hussein did. B, even if they have a program, which they are enriching uranium, Pakistan had that for years, and eventually developed a bomb in 1998, and somehow a bomb never went off in India. And yet with Iran, with the AIPAC lobby, they have created this black or white scenario that says, if, oh my God, if Iran develops a bomb, therefore they're going to drop it on Israel. Well, there's such a thing as mutual assured destruction, which said that, you know, a couple nukes that Iran has without even a real delivery system is hardly a threat to Israel that has hundreds of nukes. And they have, even though their policy is one of ambiguity and they don't admit to having them, and they have the U.S. behind them. So the idea that, you know, there's an assembly bill, a Senate bill right now that's wending its way through the Senate, 1881, that basically sponsored by Senator Kirk, that authorizes Israel, should it believe that these Geneva peace talks do not restrain Iran from producing a bomb, Israel has a right under this assembly bill to engage in unilateral military action, and the U.S. must back Israel up, therefore getting into another war. Pat Buchanan actually has a piece on that.
Well, let me ask you two quick questions about this, John, though, with the Iranians. One, here's one concern of mine. Are they capable of giving enriched uranium to terrorist groups who may want to create a dirty bomb? Would they do that?
It's extremely doubtful, just like in Pakistan. I mean, Pakistan is a far less stable country, and it has a much greater terrorism problem than Iran has. I mean, Iraq had no terrorism problem per se until we invaded them.
True.
But having said that, the reality is that if the Iranians develop a bomb, and there's a number of, you know, fairly respected U.S. military folks that believe that it could happen in the foreseeable future, like Pakistan, they wouldn't use it necessarily or turn it over to a terrorist. That's pure speculation as to what they would do. In many ways, Pakistan has become a far more responsible nation. At least the Zahari government has, since they've had a bomb since 1998. So I'm of the view that the idea that a Iranian leader could make these grandiose threats against Israel, we're going to wipe them off the map or whatever, he's no longer in power. There's two moderates right now who are very much in charge, this Hassan Rouhani and his foreign minister, Zarif. I mean, they are very pro-Western. They're both, at least Zarif is, I believe he's educated in the United States, and they are on a razor's edge, working, bending over backwards right now to restrain their uranium enrichment, which they believe that they have a right for, and restrain the Ayatollah Khamenei over the, or Khamenei, however you pronounce it, and to restrain him from nixing this Geneva deal. This Geneva deal is the best thing that has happened in U.S.-Iranian relations since the embassy was sacked in 1979.
Okay, John, we're going to talk with you more about this later. John's follow his work at onlinecolumnist.com. John Curtis. Green tea can weaken the effects of a commonly prescribed blood pressure pill, according to experts. Japanese researchers found that the herbal drink blocks special cell transporters that normally help the body absorb the beta blocker medicine. In tests, people who drank green tea alongside taking their pills ended up with lower circulating blood levels of the drug Nadolol. That's not a good thing. GMOs, genetically modified foods, are a whirlwind of controversy in areas ranging from long-term safety to consumer labeling issues. And are these genetically modified organisms safe in the food supply? Well, the FDA says you're not to worry. But some consumer groups believe that GMOs should not be freely available in the food supply. Jeffrey Smith has made a career out of watching these GMOs. Jeffrey, what do you think about all this?
Well, the government has institutionalized the lie that GMOs are no different. And this institutionalization of that has allowed the State Department, according to WikiLeaks, to really pressure countries around the world on behalf of Monsanto. And it allowed the countries to also to pressure the WTO, the new TRIPS agreement, bilateral trade agreement, and to basically say we don't even have to label it and let people know that it's there. But more than 50 bills have been introduced in 26 states for labeling in this past year. And now the biotech industry is circulating with the grocery manufacturers a bill in Congress that'll make labeling impossible at the state level, declare GE as safe, and basically say we're only going to have a voluntary labeling process unless the FDA comes around and says that GE is not safe. So really, we have a political shenanigans going on. But if you look at what the scientists said about GMOs, the scientists at the FDA described the GMO process as different and dangerous and warned repeatedly to the political appointees in charge to test GMOs. But the person in charge of policy, as we've said many times, was Monsanto's former attorney, Michael Taylor, later Monsanto's chief lobbyist, now back at the FDA as the U.S. food safety czar. And his policy ignored the scientists and said, we know of no difference, therefore GMOs are safe, don't need any testing or labeling.
Well, I'm glad we've got you watching this for us, Jeffrey. Thank you so much. Childless couples have happier marriages, according to a new study. Researchers at the Open University in the United Kingdom surveyed more than 5,000 people, found that men and women without kids are more satisfied with their relationships. Do you think that's true? That's what the survey says. Up next, by the way, Uncovering Aliens. You're going to see that soon. Mike Barra, the author, screenwriter, and he's in it. This is exciting stuff, Michael.
Yeah, it is. It's great. It's going to be like a six-hour marathon of Uncovering Aliens tomorrow night on the Discovery Science Channel. We're going to be on all through the prime time on the East Coast and the West Coast. So basically from about 8 o'clock East Coast time all the way through till 2 in the morning, you're going to be able to watch me on TV along with all my friends.
And,
yeah. You're going to see more of me than you ever wanted to, George.
Any surprises?
Yeah, there's lots of surprises. I mean, one of the things that with this show, a lot of the reality shows that investigate aliens and alien abductions, they don't really ever do an investigation. What they usually do is just, you know, wander around in the woods or go to some place they think is a secret base with those night cameras on, and they never find anything. But one of the things that we set as a standard for Uncovering Aliens is that we would have to have something to test in every episode. And you're going to see some things tomorrow night that are really going to freak you out, including we actually – you know, got footage of UFOs in Sedona, Arizona. And how many times does a show go out looking for UFOs and they actually find UFOs? And I think I can make a really strong case that what we found, that what we got on tape, is definitely some sort of spacecraft. It's a powered vehicle, and it's probably not one of ours.
All right, my friend, this is going to be good. Uncovering Aliens on the Discovery Science Channel. Look for it. It's going to air three times in a six-hour period with Mike Barra, Maureen Ellsbury, Stephen Jones, and Daryl Sims. Now, here's a bizarre story. It comes from an equally bizarre website, but it includes Iran and apparently the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, though I'm not sure he really released these documents. It's been in Forbes magazine. It's been all over the Examiner in the United Kingdom. This is the story. Documents leaked by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden prove that the United States has been ruled by a race of tall, white, space aliens who also assisted the rise of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. These are strange revelations, and we're going to check in with Michael Sala next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, what makes this story even stranger, that the United States has been ruled by a race of tall, white, space aliens who assisted the Nazis, is that the Iranian news agency, it's called the Fars News Agency, ran with this story as well. All of this, apparently, they picked up from a website, whatdoesitmean.com, that has had, you know, some questionable stories in there in the past. But we're going to bring in Dr. Michael Sala, pioneer in the development, of course, of exopolitics. He is an noted author as well, exposing U.S. government policies on extraterrestrial life. Michael, this is a strange story. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
It certainly is a strange story, George. The interesting thing here, of course, is that the Fars News Agency picked it up from the What Does It Mean website, which, as you pointed out, is quite questionable. And then what happened was that the Washington Post picked it up from the Fars News Agency and ran their own story about what the Iranians were reporting. And what the Washington Post did was basically use the kind of exopolitical claims in the Fars News Agency story to promote a geopolitical agenda. And basically what the Washington Post writer Max Fisher did was that he said, well, look at what the Iranians are thinking here. They're thinking that the U.S. is being run by space aliens that have a kind of Nazi background. And so according to Fisher, this meant that the Iranians are viewing the U.S. as kind of like an otherworldly entity that can't be negotiated with or can't be trusted. And so therefore the claim, the geopolitical claim Fisher was making, was that this was a means by which the Iranian hardliners would basically sabotage any nuclear discussions and negotiations that were going on. So according to Fisher, this was really just a means by which the Iranians could play hardball in the negotiations.
What do you think of the possibility that these documents were leaked by whistleblower Edward Snowden?
Well, there's no evidence that Snowden did leak such documents. I mean, that's really just something that Saoirse Fowle from the What Does It Mean website has more or less just kind of conjured up out of thin air.
Right.
But what is interesting is that the NSA, there is a long series of documentation showing that the NSA has been closely involved on the whole issue concerning extraterrestrial life. A number of whistleblowers have come forward to reveal the role that the NSA has played. So it is possible that the NSA does have documents detailing its history or certainly some of the activities it has had with extraterrestrials. And so I'm certainly very interested in seeing what, if any, references concerning extraterrestrial life are in the Snowden documents when they do see the light of day, because only a fraction have been leaked so far, but the rest are in the hands of some of Snowden's contacts, and so I'm waiting, like everyone else, to find out exactly what's in there.
Michael, the fact that some of the mainstream media picked up on this story, as you mentioned, the Washington Post, Forbes, The Examiner out of the United Kingdom, what does that tell you?
Well, that's very interesting because for me, that tells me that all of a sudden these kinds of claims are worth official media scrutiny. That is, for me, is the biggest development here, that the Washington Post would actually give detailed attention to these kinds of claims and not just kind of like ridicule them and dismiss them and not even examine them. But here they did examine them. They did actually look at it, and they gave the claims some attention, which of course means that other news stories suddenly, or news sources suddenly, saw this as something that could be covered, and so you had other magazines, newspapers and so forth are covering it. And so the interesting thing in the Iranian Fars news agency story was that they did cite some legitimate sources for this information. It wasn't just conjured up by source of fail. You actually had Paul Hellyer, the Canadian former defense minister, revealing his own research on this issue and an interview that he gave on RT TV. So there were some legitimate sources that were actually raised in these various articles, and some of the sources did talk about the U.S. having relations with a tall white group of aliens dating back just close to the Second World War era.
We're with Dr. Michael Sulla. And Michael, who were the tall whites? I mean, where do you think they came from? How tall were they?
Well, the best source on the tall whites is someone by the name of Charles Hall, who worked as an airman at Nellis Air Force Base in the early 1960s.
Right.
And he says, he describes what he witnessed while he was working as a weatherman there out at Indian Springs, which is in a remote area of Nellis Air Force Base. And he saw these tall white extraterrestrials with a base meeting with very senior Pentagon officials. We're talking three-star generals and so forth, and having these advanced technologies and actually helping the U.S. Air Force develop its own secret space program that were using the designs of ships that the tall whites had with atomic engines. So this is all revealed by Charles Hall in a four-series volume of books called Millennial Hospitality. And when Charles Hall first came forward with this information back in 2004, we did some research, and we found three of the airmen that worked with him out at Nellis Air Force Base during the period, and they verified aspects of his story. They basically confirmed that, yes, a lot of strange things were happening there, just as Hall described. And so what that basically tells us is that there is very strong evidence, testimonial evidence, from a direct witness that indeed these tall white extraterrestrials had a base on Nellis Air Force Base, and that they were meeting with very senior Pentagon officials in a secret effort to basically develop a secret space fleet that would be possessed and controlled by the Air Force and ultimately Space Command.
Michael, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the Russian security services and what kind of documents they might possess concerning our interactions with these so-called space aliens. We shall be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, a couple little notes for you. First of all, Jose Escamilla, who has brought us incredible stories with those flying rods over the years and his film Moon Rising, writes me to tell me that Ed Grimsley, one of our favorites, he's the father of night vision goggles looking at UFOs, is in a hospital for an unknown condition. He's in the emergency room right now, so do say a little prayer for Ed Grimsley, if you will, that Ed, who's a tough guy, gets better. So thank you, Jose, for sending that along to us. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Michael Sala with us as we talk about this truly strange story. Have you heard them this strange before, Michael?
Well, this is really a very strange development, only because you've got the official media actually putting out this to the world. I mean, so now many people around the world are being confronted with headlines saying that the U.S. is actually being controlled by Nazi space aliens, which, of course, is going to get some kind of laughs at first. But nevertheless, the idea is kind of planted there for people to open up to such a possibility, because the truth is not so far from that.
Let's talk about some of this Nazi technology that they claim these aliens passed along. What might it have been?
Well, we do know that some of the aliens that Charles Hall and others have had experiences with have been working with the U.S. to secretly develop advanced anti-gravity spacecraft. And that this was likely, if the Nazis did have their own program to develop advanced technologies, that they would have been trying to do very much the same thing. We do know from the early UFO investigations that the U.S. Air Force performed that they found that the only things that could approximate the UFO sightings were some of the technologies that Nazi Germany had been working on. So there you have kind of an official acknowledgement that the Nazis were working on something like that. And then we have a lot of kind of unconfirmed sources saying that the Nazis had retrieved extraterrestrial technologies during their research expeditions to remote parts of the Earth, that they had retrieved, actually crashed UFOs, that the Mussolini and Italy had cooperated in that, and that the Nazis themselves actually were sponsoring occult communications with advanced extraterrestrials. And so any of these things could have been the ultimate source, or maybe all of them, for the Nazis developing very advanced technologies. But certainly what the Nazis did have at the end of the war were technologies that were so far advanced to anything that the U.S. and its allies had that the U.S. actually put together very quickly a program called Paperclip, which I know you've covered
right.
In the past, to ship over as many Nazi scientists and the technologies that, as they could, so that they could start reverse engineering these themselves.
Why didn't the Nazis ever use this technology during the end of the war?
Well, I think there's a lot of evidence that they tried very desperately to develop these technologies in their secret programs. There's a Lieutenant General Hans Kammler who was involved in these advanced programs to develop weapons, advanced weapons that would win the war. Unfortunately for the Nazis, they were not successful in being able to get these ready in time, but certainly it appears that they were able to develop advanced flying saucer technologies, which weren't very good in terms of being able to use the kind of weapons that the Nazis had at the time, in terms of cannons and so forth, because they used anti-gravity torsion physics. But nevertheless, these technologies worked, and so there's a lot of evidence that the Nazis were able to relocate a lot of these technologies to distant parts of the Earth, Antarctica, South America, and so forth, using their vast fleet of submarines, submarines and their very large Junker aircraft to fly these to different parts of the earth. And I think that the Nazis were able to sufficiently take enough of this technology with them so that those that were able to escape the devastation of post-war Germany were able to build or start again somewhere in the remote parts of the earth.
The Russian Security Services, FSB, what did they possess? What kind of documents concerning our interactions with these ETs?
Well, there's the FSB is the successor to the Soviet Union's KGB, and at the end of the Cold War in 1991, the KGB, along with a lot of the rest of the Soviet Union's bureaucracies, kind of had to go through a remarkable transition, and many of them collapsed. So you had a lot of documents being released by the KGB, and some of these documents actually referred to the U.S. Being involved with aliens in various ways. In one in particular, referred to Operation High Jump, where the Admiral Byrd led a flotilla of U.S. Navy ships to Antarctica to confront the escaping Nazis, and these Soviet KGB files talked about their moles within the U.S. Department of State who were able to uncover details of that confrontation, where there was an actual military confrontation between UFOs and Admiral Byrd's Operation High Jump, where there were casualties, ships sunk, planes are shot out of the air by UFOs. So that was those were files that were released by the Soviet KGB that had been delivered to Joseph Stalin soon after Operation High Jump. So that's a very credible source that, in fact, the U.S. had been involved in a military confrontation with UFOs that were protecting or associated with the fleeing Nazi Germans and their escape technology.
All right, Michael, let's take some phone calls while we continue chatting about this very strange story indeed. Let's go to David, truck driving in Ohio. Dave, you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Michael, I just had a question. Are you familiar with the Voynich manuscript?
Not off the top of my head.
Well, it's a document that is, relatively large and has never been decrypted, all right? And, I mean, you know, they've decrypted Enigma, for crying out loud, but they've never decrypted the Voynich manuscript. Well, the NSA has this manuscript prominently displayed at their headquarters there, and I was wondering if you think that could be a secret chief, because these aliens you're talking about, I think, are the secret chief. Do you think it's possible that this manuscript could be one of their documents?
Well, I do know that the NSA has conducted a number of studies on extraterrestrials, on their capabilities, motivations, and so forth. Now, some of these have been declassified, and so you could read some of those. Others, of course, are very still remain highly classified, and possibly they are part of the data trove that Edward Snowden took with him.
You know, Michael, with all this, whether this story is true or not, as far-fetched as it may seem, what's happening with disclosure?
Well, I think what we are seeing is that there is more scientific interest in the possibility of extraterrestrial life. More academics are now open to extraterrestrials existing somewhere and that having very important implications for the Earth. And so I don't think it's going to be very long before we see academia starting to take the political implications of this very seriously. And I think that the prospects of a public disclosure are very good as this kind of story develops and unfolds, as more people in the general public start to look at stories like this. Is it possible that Nazis had been involved with the extraterrestrials? Did the U.S. Military somehow relocate a lot of these Nazi technologies? And so I think the general public is going to be drawn to this kind of information because it helps put together a very large jigsaw puzzle as to what's going on. And I think inquiring minds are going to see the connections here as more and more of this kind of information comes forward.
Well, with Dr. Michael Sala. Michael, are you still out there in Hawaii?
I am here on the Big Island and enjoying it very much and balancing my exopolitics research with a lot of surfing. So ideal combination.
I hear they're fighting GMOs out there, aren't they?
Well, actually, the Big Island of Hawaii, they passed at the county level a ban on GMOs. So that was a very progressive thing that they did here on the Big Island and on the island of Kauai as well.
George in Glendale, California, first-time caller. George, you're on with Dr. Michael Sala.
What a pleasure, Mr. Norrie. What a pleasure, Michael.
Thank you, George.
As a skeptic of UFO, I've started to think by listening to Coast to Coast that there has to be something bigger than what I and many others know, and this is making a whole lot of sense. I'm going to throw something out there. I've often wondered why the politicians, corporations, and those that run them allowed for us to ruin our planet. And I had the craziest thought. Maybe they are in alignment with other beings, and they get to leave our planet and go somewhere else, if not for periods of time, for short periods of time. It doesn't have to make sense to me, but I think that what this gentleman is talking about is starting to make a whole lot of sense to me and many. It's probably a small explanation of what's going on. Thank you so much, George.
Okay. Want to react to that, Michael?
Yes, I think it's very important to just realize that the history is slowly coming out of the historical association between extraterrestrials and various governments. We know, and I certainly have done my fair share in trying to bring out the connections with the U.S. government. But the Nazi connection is something that hasn't been kind of that well documented or brought out. But I think it's a very important connection to make because there is a history there in terms of the Second World War, how that unfolded, and what led to the development of the extraterrestrial programs in the United States. And interestingly, George, there's a connection here with John Kennedy because one of the things that many people don't realize was that John Kennedy actually had gone to post-war Germany in the summer of 1945 as a guest of the Navy Secretary, James Forrestal, and Kennedy actually witnessed a lot of the technologies that the Nazi Germans had developed and that the U.S. Navy, along with the other militaries, were trying to decide how to relocate these. And so Kennedy saw these things, and so if there's truth in the rumors or claims that Nazi Germany had developed extraterrestrial technologies, then it's very likely then that Kennedy actually saw these in 1945 when he went to Germany, and that this was related to Kennedy's own presidential ambitions when he became president in 1961.
Yeah, long before his political aspirations. So he must have kept that tucked away in his head.
Well, he was a very close friend of James Forrestal because Forrestal wanted to recruit Kennedy to his personal staff. Forrestal was a friend of Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, and so he saw Kennedy as a very bright, precocious young man that he wanted to have on his staff. And so he revealed a lot of things to Kennedy. And when Kennedy became a congressman in 1946-47, Forrestal became the Secretary of Defense, as you all know. And he continued to brief Kennedy and other people in Congress about some of the various programs that the Department of Defense were involved in. And there's a lot of suggestions that Forrestal was actually briefing these congressmen on the extraterrestrial programs that were secretly being run at the Pentagon.
Let's go to John in Billings, Montana. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hello.
Howdy.
Howdy. Happy New Year.
You too, John.
Last time I got on the line, Art was talking.
Geez, that's like a century ago.
Oh, boy, I go back.
But go ahead.
I wanted to add comment. My dad, he died in 69, but he was in the OSS as a Polish interpreter on Eisenhower's staff before we even got into the war. And I was born in a military base that had ICBMs in Montana here. And some of this stuff that, they had everything from crop circles to the cattle mutilations to Bigfoot sightings and, and what some people thought were helicopters were, and I can attest to the the third being or whatever you'd say above you that just shot up the highway in a heartbeat. And when my dad died in 1969, some limousines pulled up in front of the house. Some men in black came into the house, emptied out his den, and who knows what records he had from everything he'd seen from Europe in, like I say, from 69 on. I mean, he'd seen a lot of stuff back in the day. And, you know, I was pretty young back, and I was like 9 years old, but I remember them guys show up and clean out his records for what he knew. And, you know, born in a military base there and the ICBMs. And there was that time that they hard to talk that the there was no way to direct the missiles. And that one general you had on once that said, yeah, everything had just shut down and no one had no way to shoot anything off.
No, they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, and that's at that time I was living up in Conrad when they brought in Boeing and, you know, they rebuilt everything and the intercontinental ballistic missiles and they were just shut down.
Well, Michael, this tall white race of ETs, are they friendly? Are they giving us good information or not?
Well, I think the fact that they work very closely with the U.S. military and the military-industrial complex in providing technologies that have been used to develop secret spacecraft that have been used on all sorts of missions, and in exchange, the tall whites get basing rights and get other Earth resources, that's all done in secrecy. I think that kind of tells us a little bit about the kind of motivations and the integrity of that kind of group of ETs. I'm certainly an advocate that there are many different types of ET groups that are visiting our world. I think many of them don't have anything to do with the U.S. military. They work more with private individuals to raise consciousness and to kind of open people up to new possibilities of the future. But those ET groups, such as the Tall Whites that Charles Hall talked about in his four-series Millennial Hospitality, I think the conclusion you could draw from that is that they certainly aren't a very friendly race. Certainly they are very businesslike, very much kind of contractually oriented. They follow the letter of the law or the letter of negotiations. So any negotiations and the agreements that have been reached between U.S. Military authorities and the Tall Whites would be very closely monitored and implemented by these ETs. So certainly I wouldn't regard them as that friendly.
What do you think they want?
Well, I think the Earth has a very rich resources in terms of flora and minerals and water and kind of biological materials. So I think that they see us as really a planet that has lots of resources, and that they, if they reach agreements with our military and political elites, that they could basically have access to these resources and take them off planet for their own benefit.
Michael, your website, exopolitics.org, anything new there these days?
Well, yes, there is a book that's just come out. It's called Kennedy's Last Stand, and that's just being promoted now on the website, where I talk about the history of John Kennedy, beginning in the days when he was a friend of James Forrestal.
All right, perfect.
Germany.
Very good. Michael, thank you so much for being on the program and reacting to this truly strange story. Up next, Jerome Corsi joins me. Full program, Hunting Hitler. New scientific evidence that Hitler escaped Nazi Germany.